Welcome to the ARA Forum. I am Andy Wettig, Executive Director of the Airport Restaurant and Retail Association. Today we begin a special series of the ARA Forum. A number of well-known, longtime participants in our industry have recently changed positions from airports to concessionaires. For them, this means looking at the business of concessions from the, quote, other side. In these conversations, we will be asking each of them their thoughts about the other perspective. What have they learned? What has surprised them? They want their colleagues on both the airport and concession side to understand about the other side. As our first guest in this special series, we welcome Dawn Hunter. Dawn is now Vice President of Business Development for SSP America. She joined SSP earlier this year. Before SSP, Dawn was Commercial Manager for the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport for 5 years, and before that, more than 17 years with Los Angeles World Airports. Dawn is one of the icons in our industry, and now she has seen the business from both sides. Welcome, Dawn. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Dawn, you've long been one of the airport industry's advocates for equitable and sustainable concessions agreements. Now, after 8 months with SSP, what are your initial impressions of the concessionaire business? What surprised you?
My initial thoughts is that it is more complex than what I realized. On the airport side, I just thought, you know, hey, you bid on the RFP, you build the concession, and you run it. But it is way more complex than I ever imagined. And the intricacy that goes into opening just one space and the planning behind that is so much on the concession side. And it costs more than what I thought it cost. And it has more levels than what I thought it had. So that's my initial. And I think what surprised me the most was, I'm sure we're going to get into this, is how much things really cost the concessionaire to do business in an airport. That's what's most surprising to me. I knew, and, you know, in my old role, I would tell my, you know, colleagues, you know, it's going to cost them a lot of money. But I had no idea how much money it really cost. And it was really, really eye-opening to just kind of dig into the weeds and see the other side of the business.
What are some of those costs? What have you learned that you didn't know when you were working for the airports about costs or the types of costs or even the level of costs? We all know it was expensive, but as you said, how expensive? That's a surprise.
Well, I would say what I'm learning now is that first, high level of employments and high level of sales do not always equal profitability. You know, there I've heard people say it, and I probably said it in my lifetime, those concessionaires over there just printing money. You know, it's this thought that, you know, people are just coming through buying beer and a sandwich and they're just making a lot of money and they're just complaining because they want more from the airport. And I'm really seeing now, as you dig into some of the numbers, just because I have, you know, 50 million passengers coming through and I have some sales, that doesn't mean profitability. And why I say that is that because I think that I didn't really understand how much things cost. And, you know, I know that I'm going to keep it all of myself. I know that I made decisions on the airport side and had no idea, you know, of the implications of those. And what I'll say is, like, for instance, how do I want to put this? So let me use an example. Say I have a full service restaurant. There's 10 employees, managers, all of these things that have to go on in that space, which is at a cost because, you know, you have to pay whatever that living wage is in that city. And then I have a $4 million restaurant, full service, and based on labor, cost of goods, cost at the airport, the rent, all of those things, I could only walk away making 3% based on where I'm at in the airport, which is not a good business model, right? And so, well, they're saying, well, you're making $4 million of sales. But if my profitability is low, you know, and let's say a life event happens, we're not just talking about COVID or 9/11, there could be airport redevelopment. And that takes Delta or whomever off that whole concourse, and I'm pretty much shut down from employments. For that particular location, at that profitability level, I'm going out of business. But when I was on the airport side, in my mind, I was like, well, you're making $4 million. You can stand to stay closed for a year and a half. that should be okay, for you to be able to sustain. And then I wanted to add to that, a lot of times when you have a high volume restaurant, what we would do is pair them up with a clunker or, one that is not as high volume to have some economies of sales.
Yes, we did.
And in a model like this, where you're making millions of dollars, but your profitability is low, and that one shining star is impacted, airport construction, anything, we've basically set someone up for failure. So that's one of the things I learned. That's not necessarily a good practice. Maybe we ask ourselves, or we should have, I should have asked myself, why is this location not profitable? And should this location still be part of the package? Maybe it's better served as an office, and we find another location for a concession. Those are just perspectives that, now that I'm in this role, kind of looking back and seeing. And then, yeah, I think just, and when we also talk about costs, it's like, and I was going to get into this later, but when you control so many things, like what we can charge, and all these things, you're constraining the profit level. And I always think about it like this. If I were another tenant, say an airline, that seat that cost me $600 back in 2019 is now $1,600. And of course, it's cost recovery. They lost money. So it makes sense from a business perspective that you're going to charge more to do some cost recovery so you can retain your employees, you can be profitable. These are publicly traded companies. I can go back into my people and say, hey, I've recovered, I'm good, don't fire me. And then you also look at, other tenant agreements, such as our rent-a-car family, who are also under concessions agreement. And you look at them, that rent-a-car that was $60 a day. I think the other day I paid $300 a day for my rent-a-car, and I happily paid it because I wanted the rent-a-car. And it's cost recovery from a business perspective. I don't want them to go out of business, so I paid it and I moved on. And it makes sense to the airport because, of course, we want our rent-a-car companies not to go out of business and to be sustainable. But it's interesting as a tenant in the airport, well, I'm a tenant now, a tenant in the
Yes, you
airport.
are now.
That there's so much constraint put on those concessions contract and holding people to those contracts and saying you should be able to survive without doing cost recovery. And it's interesting. And I've heard people say that, well, why do you need to charge more? Why do you need Street Plus? Why do you need to lower, why do you need to lower these costs? And I'm thinking in the back of my head, as a business, I've gone through several rounds of budgeting at an airport, and the main thing we're looking at is reducing costs, reducing that expense budget so that the airlines pay less, right? And so everyone looks at their costs and wants to do cost recovery, but it doesn't seem to be a model that is lended in some places to concessions contracts.
That's a very keen insight because not only does, no control on the prices for the people who may have sales to the passengers, the airlines and the rental cars, and no one controls. City controls the taxi rates, but that's all managed outside of the program. Uber charges whatever they need to generate business at that one moment in time. Yet concessionaires are the only part of the airport ecosystem that is price controlled.
Yes.
And you also noted then that the perspective is let's look at sales, let's look at the top line when at the end of the day, it's the bottom line that matters. And you pointed out that the airlines, the rental cars, those are all public companies that need to go back and report to their shareholders how they are growing their revenues and recovering their costs. Yet much of the concessions industry is also public and
Exactly.
has the same pressures on them, just isn't
Exactly.
something that is recognized. Isn't recognized. So from these observations, what would you want your old airport colleagues to know about the concession side to help them build better programs? Because after all, we're in this to serve the traveling public to create great customer experience, as well as make a fair return so that it is sustainable going forward. But what have you learned that you want them to know?
Well, the first thing I would say is I have not met one concessionaire, whether it's an SSP America, HMS Host, or any company that says, I don't care about their customer experience. We want to service the customer. We want to give them the best possible experience. We want to be fully staffed. You know, we want to make sure that we have all the products that we said we were going to have on our menu in line in the store to serve the passengers. We want that. We want to be open on time. You know, we want all of those things that you want for us because we want to make money. No one wants to pay $1 million for a restaurant and have it closed or have hours reduced. And so that would be the first thing I would say is we do care about the passenger experience. Secondly, when you talk about, I think the question was, you know, how they're building a better program. And so a lot of times when people are doing a master plan or redoing the program itself, you know, they take staff or they hire a wonderful consultant and the consultant will go in and say, that 2000 square foot should be a sit down. That, you know, 500 square feet should be specialty retail. And it's on a very molecular level. When you're talking about building a program, I think we need to unzip that a little bit. When you're building the program, to be helpful to us is, first of all, open dialogue. What do you think? You know, because we're the ones that are going to have to execute on this. Having that dialogue between tenant and airport would be helpful up front to say, this is what we think the program is. Is it over concession? Is it over food and beverage? You know, is there too much, too little? And then I say the second thing, unzip that a little bit more. Airports do construction all day long. They know the cost of construction. So instead of having your staff or consultant just say, this 2,000 square feet should be food and beverage, sit down restaurant, Mexican. It should be a little bit more than that. I said, okay, we know as an airport, it costs $2,500 a square foot to build this. So it's going to cost X amount of dollars. And we're requiring 30% ACDB participation. So it's not just SSP wallet you're opening up. Now we're the small businesses, you're opening up their wallet too. And so then on top of that, it's going to cost them $2.5 million to build this, $3 million, however much that is. Let's look long-term. How long is it going to take for them to amortize that initial investment so the JV partner, forget SSP, that JV partner that you want so badly to succeed, to pay that back, is 10 years really realistic for us? Back when it cost $200,000, we were given 10-year term. That was 25 years ago. Now it's $2.5 million to build this, and the term is still the same. And I understand from the airport perspective, we didn't want to increase the term because we're like, we want new freshness, we want new things in, we want to give people opportunities. But the reality of what's happening here is the costs are so exorbitant that it's almost setting people up for failure. And I'm thinking more now, and this is one thing I didn't know, and I didn't think about on the airline side, I mean, airport side. I cared about our JV partners, but now I'm like, I'm in their pocket. I'm taking money out of their pocket to build for the airport. And so now I have to be mindful that everything I promised the airport that I can do, like in construction, throw extra, you know, why can't you work nights and weekends and put them on overtime? Okay, I could do that, you know, but then now my JV partner has to put 30% more into that. And that is not profitable for them with that 10-year term. Let's unzip it a little bit more. Let me look at my airport environment. Not only, you know, is there the constraint for construction, but labor, you know, $30 an hour at LAX. That's great. You know, I want people to have a living wage. I lived in LA. I know it's expensive, you know, to live, but I've also have street pricing on them. So that profitability in labor, now we're getting constrained. And that still impacts that JV partner because based on profitability, that's how they get paid, right? And so these are all things that I want when we're talking about building a better program. It's not just having someone come in and draw the boxes and say, let's put a local celebrity chef in there and this will be great. It is really looking holistically at not only the physical building, but the financial terms of contractual agreement and seeing, does this make business sense? And I get it. These are city jobs for a lot of people. And, you know, I didn't major in business. I came to work for the city and I can manage a contract. But I would just encourage people. I mean, and this is what I did because I didn't know anything about concessions when I started. I spent time. Why does that sandwich cost $14? Why? Help me understand the rationale behind it so then I can better make better choices, you know, when I'm leading this program. And yeah, I would love my colleagues to really understand. And maybe we haven't done a good job of explaining the economics to a point where it helps someone make sense to make better decisions. And that, you know, so it's both sides of the table really understanding each other and where we are, because we don't want the airport to fail either. They have to make money because the FAA says they have to make money so they can get federal funds. So
So let's turn this around. Those are all very keen insights for the airport teams. But what, from your airport side, besides the fact that the airport needs to make money as well, what do you think concessionaires need to recognize? What do concessionaires need to understand about the airport perspective?
well, first thing I will say, the airport is governed by a set of rules, whether it's the FAA, TSA regulatory, you know, there's a set of rules the airport has to live by. So there's certain things the airport can and cannot do. And then layered on top of that are state laws and regulations, you know, like, you know, in my last employment in Seattle and Washington, giving, you know, things like, you know, MAG or you know, things like that. It's considered a gift of public fund and it's in the state constitution. So there's just things that some airports can't do because they're just bound by whatever regulatory things is happening in, you know, from a federal, local, state, and then municipal area. Port of Seattle, I mean, the airport is in the city of SeaTac. That's why it was called SeaTac,
Gotcha.
Seattle and Tacoma. SeaTac itself put in orders that anyone working in that area has to pay a certain wage, and they set that wage every January. So the airport couldn't come back and say, well, you don't have to pay that because they don't have a say in that, right? And so that would be the first thing that I would want concessionaires to understand. It's not that sometimes airports don't want to be good partners. Sometimes they're bound by certain things, and you should see the level of frustration that we would have over that because we want to do something that we just physically couldn't do. I think the second thing is that a lot of airports, how do I say this and I get myself in trouble? A lot of airports have hierarchies, and some of the people at the top of the hierarchy who ultimately make decisions are making decisions citywide. So they're not airport experts. They're not concessions experts. They are city officials who have been elected or chosen to do a job, and that is make the best possible decision for whatever is in front of them at the time during that meeting. And, you know, I would laugh and say, you know, no one would dare tell operations how to land a plane because who knows how to land a plane? We don't know that. And they know they don't know that, right? They would never, you know, tell security how to keep the airport secure because they don't know all these secret TSA regulations and FAA regulations. So who would dare speak on that? And half of those things don't even come to public forum because we don't want people to know. But everybody has had a cup of coffee. Everyone's made a burger. Everyone's been to their favorite restaurant. So everybody knows everything about concessions in an airport. And sometimes you have people who want to make decisions because, you know, you've awarded this. But I've gone to this one establishment for 15 years and they make the best coffee. So no, we're going to go on this way. I mean, sometimes it is just that subjective, you know? And I have been around long enough to see airport staff make certain recommendations and have them overturn. And we're just as dumbfounded as a concessionaire. Like, what just happened to our life here? And
I've
so,
been in a few of those.
you know? And so I think we all want the same thing, you know? I think that when you have an airport that you're dealing with and it's always confrontational, there's a reason. It may not, maybe it's just that person, but a lot of times pressure being put on the airport by airlines because a lot of these agreements say, you know, the more efficient the airport is to reduce costs, less the airlines have to pay, but the more non-aeronautical revenue that's generated offset those costs as well. And so they get a lot of pressure on, you know, well, I walked through the terminal and the concessionaires were closed. They're not making money. What's going on? Make them do it. Make them open. Make them, my crew comes through at midnight. Yeah, there's only five of them, but I think at least three restaurants should be open so that they have a choice of what they eat. I mean, I've had those conversations and I'm like, okay, no, but there's pressures coming from different places. I just think that sometimes you will see that airports can't tell you all the time about, I've had been in three meetings with the airlines and they're screaming bloody murder because of a concourse that's closed. But are we doing a good enough job to say, hey, can we sit down with the airlines? This is why we're closed. You all have one flight. Your flight is at 6 a.m., your flight's at noon, and yours is at midnight. I cannot sustain staying open unless we have some consistency in flight. And this is what it's costing me to do that, which impacts the bottom line of what we give. And so I think, earlier, like I said, I think we really need to understand each other and there needs to be dialogue. And there's too much quoting of contracts. Well, your contract says, why don't we sit around and talk about the state of the airport? Because one of the things I did realize going back to the last question is that, oh, well, to this one, I don't think concessionaires really understand how airports really run. And I don't think airports really understand how concessions are really run. And there needs to be some type of meeting of the minds, because on this side, I'll hear people saying things. I'm like, you can't do that in an airport. Or, why is the airport asking us to put in this provision for language proficiency? It's called Title VI. And now they're really coming down on us on the airports for Title VI. And that's part of their Title VI plan. So you're a major part of it because people are going to come to you before they go to the airport. And so they're going to complain about the airport because we didn't have language preferences on our menu. And so that impacts their Title VI and their federal funds. But concessionaires don't know stuff like that. And so there
That's right.
really needs, yeah, there needs to be more of a communication and understanding.
That's perfect. So we run out of time. So thank you, Don Hunter, for sharing your insights. They are very informative. I'm sure people will learn a lot today. And thank you for joining us on the ARA Forum.
Thank you so much.
And on behalf of the Airport Restaurant and Retail Association, I thank everybody out there for watching, listening to, or reading the ARA Forum today. Be sure to watch your email or follow us on LinkedIn for the next episode of our special series, If I Knew Then, What I Know Now. I'm Andy Wettig. Have a good day.